of the Monthly Review, speaking to us from Washington State. His most recent piece, we'll link to it, democracynow.org, called The Trump Doctrine and the New MAGA Imperialism. Happy birthday to Christine Marr. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Hey, everyone. I'm Shay from Planned Parenthood. Here are some fast facts about abortion. Abortion is really common. Chances are you know someone who's had an abortion. In the United States, about 1 in 4 women will have one by the age of 45. Abortion is extremely safe. Abortion is safer than getting your tonsils out or your wisdom teeth pulled. And abortion doesn't increase your risk of cancer, infertility, mental health issues, or any other health problems. The majority of people who get abortions are already parents. 59% of people who have had abortions have had at least one childbirth experience. Most people in the U.S. think abortion should be legal by a wide margin. 80% of Americans want abortion to remain legal, even in states where politicians pass laws against abortion. For more information, visit PlannedParenthood.org.
You are tuned to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, operating at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, and on the entire internet. WUSB.FM is our address. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good, hot, steamy afternoon to everybody out there. The program is Off the Wall, back after 2 weeks. Emmanuel Goldstein over here. Kyle's over there.
What in the hell do you want? What, I mean, honestly, what could I possibly do for you?
You can make all it cooler. Of you. Make it cooler. Make no. It, you can make everything cooler, Kyle. Yeah.
That's, oh, like culturally?
Well, okay, sure, I'll take that.
Or like
the temperature. I'm thinking temperature right now.
Wow.
But hey, you know, we
is
weren't
this
on
too close. What am I?
No, your mic is fine.
Can I make a really obnoxious microphone noise?
Listeners, do you want to judge Kyle's microphone here?
Okay. How about now?
You're touching your face with it. I don't think you're supposed to do that.
No. Is it better this way?
Put it back the way.
How about
it was
over here?
It can't possibly be comfortable.
All right. If it's higher, okay. Yeah. What were you saying?
No. Last week we weren't here. Well, actually, I was kind of here. I was kind of everywhere because we had the WUSB Canada Day celebration. And something fun happened. It was definitely a fun experience. I was up for more than a day straight, but you know, sometimes that's the most fun you can have. The Canadian media really took an interest. I was on CBC four times talking about this particular marathon that we did, where we were playing Canadian content for 24 hours. And we had everybody at WUSB involved in some manner, well, a good number of people anyway, with all different kinds of music. And they were moved by it. They were fascinated by it. And American media couldn't care less. You know, and I think that says so much. We reached out to a lot of American media. We reached out to a little bit of Canadian media. And the Canadian media basically spread the word amongst themselves. And that's how I wound up talking to four different outlets, including As It Happens, which is the national program. That is a lifetime dream to be on that program, and it just kind of happened. But absolutely no, even the local papers couldn't care less about it. So that, I think that right there points to some of what the problem is that we don't listen to what's going on in the rest of the world, even our next door neighbors, even after we have offended and attacked and just been, you know, just horrible people. And I don't mean us. Obviously, most people, I think, really can't stand the way that we have been behaving towards them. But our government represents us, so it is us. And we have to fight back against that. And I like to think for one day, WUSB did just that. And it was pretty awesome, pretty amazing, and just another indication of what an inspirational place this can be if people put their heads together. Yeah, and that was fun. That's why we weren't here last week. I did a show about Newfoundland music. It's funny because I talked to the Newfoundland CBC outlet, and they were just so amazed that I knew anything about Newfoundland music. And it's not hard. It's not hard to just, you know, dive into it, learn about the artists, play some of the music, and become totally absorbed with it. Same thing for Indigenous music. There is so much incredible content out there. And it spreads throughout the entire nation. There's all sorts of different types of music and culture. And that's what I think all of us can do, whether we're involved in radio or not. So that was last week. That was why we weren't here. And then we had the 4th of July, our national day. And it was, you know, kind of subdued. At least, you know, that's what I noticed, is that, yeah, you had fireworks, you had people blowing things up, but it kind of stopped pretty quickly, and there wasn't much of a build-up to it either. It was just kind of going through the motions. That's what I felt anyway. Maybe that's what was in my head, but it just I don't know. It seemed to lack the fun, the passion, and I can sort of get why, because boy, things are kind of not going well. A lot of negativity out there, and I think that trickles down. That really does have an effect. You know, we've talked about ice in this program. I don't mean the kind that I wish I had on my face right now. I mean the kind that is terrorizing people throughout the country. And I don't just mean criminals. I don't just mean undocumented. I mean all of us. All of us. You know, whether your relative was Benjamin Franklin and you've been in this country for as long as Westerners have been in this country, or your family has been, when you have a bunch of masked people invading your city, or as was the case yesterday in Los Angeles, a park where children are playing, you basically storm in with your military vehicles and horses and people whose faces are covered, and just display a show of force for no particular reason. No actions were taken. No arrests were made. There was nothing actually happening. Just, we're here. and we intend to intimidate. It doesn't matter what your immigration status is. That should be deeply offensive. That should be something that we all unite against. And if we don't do that, then we have lost. We have lost everything. Because that kind of thing isn't going to go away. That kind of thing is going to become normal. Just like all the crazy things that we have around us today, you know, cell phones and social media and Bachelor season 50, whatever the hell. It's all going to become part of our day-to-day life. It happens all around the world. A lot of us didn't think it could ever happen here. And we're seeing it happen every day. Which reminds me, I have to let people know about this. My ICE alert went off today. Every day I get an ICE alert. Unfortunately, I get them a little too late because several hours ago. Bayshore, three agents seen detaining an individual. And there's video. The app is called Long Island ICE Tracker. And it's made by the people called Islip Forward. And I recommend it. Put it on your phone. At least know what's going on. The crazy, insane bill, which is what I call it, finally passed. We all kind of knew it would. And with that came a bit of an increase in the ICE budget. Now, a lot of rumors have been flying around, a lot of misinformation, so much so that Snopes had to put out an article about this. So we're going to take a look at this because, you know, we don't want misinformation to get out there. We want the facts. The 2025 budget package, known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, it's incredible how everybody refers to it that way. No matter how straight-laced you are in the world of journalism, yeah, it's the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. No, it's not. No, it's not. It increases the budget for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement from $3.5 billion to $48.5 billion. That was the claim. And Snopes did a little bit of fact-checking and came up with this correction. The most recent version of the bill would actually add about $30 billion to ICE's base budget through September 30th, 2029, with another $45 billion specifically for detention centers. And that makes for a total of $75 billion on top of whatever ICE's annual base budget might be in the coming years. Yeah, so Snopes stepped in to say that these people that are going around saying, my God, the ICE budget has gone from $3.5 billion to $48.5 billion, they've been corrected. No, it's not $48.5 billion, it's $75 billion. You didn't get upset enough. I've never seen this before. I've never seen Snopes basically call something false because it didn't go far enough. But think about this. What we've been seeing up until now, the scariness, the intimidation, that was with their budget of $3.5 billion. And now they have $75 billion. What do you think we're building here? What kind of a society are we constructing? Are we allowing to be constructed in front of us? It's truly scary, and you should be scared. Regardless of your immigration status, you should be scared, because I guarantee you, it's not going to stop with undocumented or even with immigrants. They're going to turn their sights onto anybody who gets in their way. And that's why you have to fight back in whatever way you can. Right now, what seems to really upset them is information. Information on where they are, who they are, what their vehicles are, pictures, videos, anything that is actual documentation of what they are doing. Because they like to operate in the cloak of darkness and anonymity. They want to be out there with nobody knowing who they are. You know, imagine this. These military vehicles pull up on a park in Los Angeles yesterday while kids are playing. It's just literally, I couldn't paint, you know, a more Norman Rockwell type of a picture here. But kids are playing, and all of a sudden, these thugs, these goons, there's no other word for them, I mean, that's what they're designed to be. They just suddenly appear. You don't know who they are. You don't know where they're from. You know, it could have been the Mexican army. You don't know. It could be any army. It could be just a bunch of terrorists. And many people would say they are a bunch of terrorists, because what is the definition of terrorism? Using intimidation to enforce political change. That's exactly what's happening here. So, it's something that is of great concern, you know, and if we don't step up, and if we continue to buy into the nonsense that's being peddled about how this is for our own good, like I said, we're going to lose. We're going to lose everything.
I think it really is going to be about organizing our own militias to defend against this kind of federal overreach. And ironically, this is the kind of thing that people on the right would talk about as being the federal government wasting money. You know, they should be shrunk. They shouldn't be, handling taxpayer money because they spend it poorly and all of that. Or when the federal government comes to try to tell you what to do, you have your states' rights or your liberty and blah blah blah. Well, here's the manifestation, and I really think that right now those militias, that organizing that you're talking about, has to be about information, because it does annoy them, and they are actively trying to hide and cloak their activities. And have a lot of means to do that. But I think continuing that organization will prepare people for when they actually do have to resist this physically. And I think it's already too far gone, period. Like we are up against something that is... It is un-American, and I don't think that anybody in power, if they were under a different administration and these kinds of agents were knocking on their doors or coming into their cities to push them around, I don't think they would stand for it. I think they would be brandishing weaponry, and I think that's what it's going to come to. They want a civil war already, and they're annoying enough of the masses and now flexing this kind of budget that, to me, ultimately they're going to get what they want. They're going to get a civil war. They will get organized militias of people resisting. And when it comes to brutality, the minute local police officers start dying at the hands of ICE because local police won't capitulate, or they will try to defend and serve their populace instead of the federal agents, I think you'll start seeing a lot more physical resistance in the form of weaponry.
You raise a very good point, because I was going to get to this. You see LAPD in the videos where these troops are marching on a park, and they're there for crowd control. They're there to keep conflict from happening. That's the story anyway. But you notice when they are driving away, they're driving away at high speed. In fact, I was watching KTLA, I think it was KTLA, it might have been another station. But the helicopter correspondent was saying, my God, I just saw a police car almost hit a pedestrian, and it looked like he wasn't trying to avoid it. And that's, I've never seen that before. The guy in the studio was trying to, say something a bit more acceptable, like, well, I'm sure he didn't know that what he was doing, and those people shouldn't be in the street. But you could tell this guy was shaken by seeing this. And that is the perception of the cops, that they're not there for the people. They're there to facilitate whatever it is that ICE is doing. And, I'm not an enemy of cops. I'm an enemy of bad cops. And there are too many bad cops. There's nothing better than a good cop, somebody who actually helps people in his neighborhood. And I say that, or her neighborhood, because you should be familiar with the neighborhood that you are a part of. You should be a part of that, just like in the old days, which might not ever have existed. But what we have now is we have a perception that whatever the police force is and whatever city is being invaded by these people, they're in cahoots. Even though in a state like California, in a state like New York, they're not supposed to be. So if you have that perception, it's very hard to see the cops as somebody who would be on your side. That has to change. And if cops want to be treated as heroes, they need to start acting like heroes. And that means standing up to this. That means being the guy in front of the tank. That means blocking these people. And yeah, you know, you might get a cop car crushed by a tank or whatever it is they're driving. Imagine the optics of that. As soon as something like that happens, the people are going to come to your side. The people will back you up. And you'll find you're on the same side. And won't that be a beautiful day? And maybe you'll just drive these punks out of the city for good. But we need something like that. Because just sitting back and watching it on TV, that's not going to cut it. And you see what happened to their budget, you know? 3.5 to 75? What do you think is going to happen now? What do you think they're going to do with all that money?
It's a lot of tear gas.
It's a lot more than tear gas.
It's a lot of bullets.
They'll have full-on Terminators. I don't know what they're going to do with all that money.
They're going to kill people.
Oh, absolutely. That's a given. I know
straight
that.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm predicting, I think, that local law enforcement will get caught in this somehow, and that will probably occur.
But, you know,
somewhere.
You have states like Florida and Texas who are all too eager to play ball with these people. In fact, Florida, somehow, they built a concentration camp. And I'm sorry, give me a better word for it. It's a concentration camp. All right? All these people are being shuttled into it because they're immigrants or because they're undocumented or because they're vulnerable. And basically, they're being kept in inhumane conditions. And they built this place in a couple of months or less. I don't know how they did this. It's called Alligator Alcatraz. It's sick. They're making fun of it. They're having fun. And there's other states saying, hey, we want to do this too. You know, those are not friends of the people. You might think they are if you're one of the people that's not being imprisoned at the moment. But as soon as the tide turns, you'll realize these are ugly people.
There's an article about the company that is being used to contract to build a lot of these tents and temporary structures. I think they had FEMA contracts and stuff. They actually started out building structures for events like Lollapalooza and festivals and stuff, and then pivoted. I think they're called Deployable Resources, and they also have an arm called Deployable Services, where they can, like, you know, offer sanitation and other stuff for these concentration camps, but they're profiting off of and really cornering the market on these kinds of government contracts to build facilities like this, not for disaster relief, but to embody this disaster that is concentrating people and taking away their liberty.
And many of these people have not been accused of any crime other than being here without the documentation that is demanded right now. And many of these people are in a process to become legal citizens. They showed up for their court hearings. You know, people who are trying to get away with something don't show up for court hearings. Now, I guarantee you, less and less people are showing up for court hearings because they fear being arrested as soon as they do. So, it's a crazy scenario that is being laid out where you're criminalizing people who are not criminals just because of who they are. And it's a real downward spiral that we're heading in now.
Can I jump ahead like three stories?
Oh.
I don't even want to talk about the depravity of this administration. I really don't. I'm sorry. I don't mean to like rush through anything. But I heard that place flooded, right? The place in Florida.
It did,
like,
It flooded
immediately. Of course. It's not like an airfield
or
whatever.
Worms in the food. There's you know, no place to, you have to sleep on the floor.
Worms in the food.
I don't know how they did that, but
dang.
Yeah. At least that means it's edible to somebody.
Okay, so then now Texas got destroyed by weather?
Well, I do have to take a step to get there because first of all, I wanted to mention the Supreme Court today. This just happened.
I just want to point out the hypocrisy and irony in that story.
You couldn't have, You couldn't have known this because
it
just happened today. The Supreme Court, yes.
Rubber stamp.
Basically, another rubber stamp. Trump's plans to downsize federal workforce, despite warnings that critical government services will be lost and hundreds of thousands of federal employees will be out of their jobs. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson was the only dissenting vote, accusing her colleagues of a demonstrated enthusiasm for greenlighting this president's legally dubious actions in an emergency posture. She warned of enormous real-world consequences. This executive action promises mass employee terminations, widespread cancellation of federal programs and services, and the dismantling of much of the federal government as Congress has created it.
Well, sadly, I hope they all live and, well, you know, stay healthy because I don't want him appointing more people.
Well, you know, I'm not going to even comment on that because I won't be able to stop.
No, it's stupid and there's no hope for that. Well, it's a bad court now. It'd be worse if there were other people there under this administration and they're just a rubber stamp. At least she said something.
Let's keep those words in our minds as we move to Texas, because what happened in Texas is simply, it's unimaginable. First of all, I don't understand the numbers because, you know, while I was watching the story develop, and I was watching the story develop before the true magnitude became known. It wasn't even a news story. There were 27 people confirmed dead and 27 missing. And for some reason, that missing number seems to just stay the same while the death toll goes up. And, okay, so I even have an update now. It was 100, just over 100 confirmed dead with another two dozen still missing. I don't know if they just didn't know how many people were out there to start with. But now, at least 161 people in Kerr County are still missing.
Wait, that's on top of the dead?
Well, yeah, it's obviously
so
on top of the dead.
So people are probably still reporting in, hey, I haven't heard from this person, I haven't heard from that person, and then they're actually doing recovery in the areas where they're starting to take a look and assess damage.
I suppose, yeah, but you know, it just seemed like there was a profound lack of communication. But the question has also come up, and rightfully so, and anybody who tells you not to talk about it is you know, trying to cover something up. But basically the question, and this comes from BBC, did the U.S. government cuts contribute to the Texas tragedy? I'm just going to read a little bit of this from BBC Verify. In the aftermath of the fatal Texas floods, some Democrats have warned about the consequences of the Trump administration's cuts to the federal government workforce, including meteorologists, with Senator Chris Murphy saying that accurate weather forecasting helps avoid fatal disasters. The suggestion is that the cuts may have impeded the ability of the National Weather Service, the government agency which provides weather forecasts in the states, to adequately predict the floods and raise the alarm. But the White House press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, said yesterday, these offices were well-staffed, so any claims to the contrary are completely false. BBC Verified has examined the impact of cuts under President Trump in this area, and while there has been a reduction in the workforce at the National Weather Service, experts who we spoke to said the staffing on hand for the Texas floods appears to have been adequate. However, there's always a however. The staffing levels of the National Weather Service have already been separately reduced by the Trump administration's efficiency drive since January. The Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, remember them? Previously run by Elon Musk, remember him? Offered voluntary redundancies, known as buyouts, as well as early retirements to federal government workers. It also ended the contracts of most of those who were on probation. As a result, about 200 people at the National Weather Service took voluntary redundancy, and 300 opted for early retirement. That's according to Tom Fahey, legislative director of the National Weather Service Employees Organization Union. A further 100 people were ultimately fired from the service. In total, the National Weather Service lost 600 of its approximately 4,200 staff. That's a lot. That's a good percentage. And that caused several offices across the country to operate without the necessary staffing. In April, the AP said it had seen data compiled by National Weather Service employees showing half of its offices had a vacancy rate of 20%, double the rate a decade earlier. Despite this, climate experts told BBC Verify that the National Weather Service forecast and flood warnings last week in Texas were as accurate I'm sorry, adequate as could be expected. However, two howevers in one story, yeah. Some experts have suggested that staffing cuts may have impeded the ability of local National Weather Service offices in Texas to effectively coordinate with local emergency services. Yeah, and that's what we're talking about here, lack of communication. There is a real question as to whether the communication of weather information occurred in a way that was suboptimal, said Daniel Swain, a climate scientist at University of California, Los Angeles. Interesting how they name the people that are critical and the ones who support the way things are, they're just experts. The impact might have been partially averted if some of the people at the Weather Service responsible for making those communications were still employed, which they were not in some of these local offices. The San Angelo and San Antonio offices, which cover the areas affected by the flooding, reportedly had some existing vacancies. The National Weather Service Union Legislative Director told BBC Verify that the San Angelo office was missing a senior hydrologist, and that's a scientist who specializes in flooding events. That's right. The San Antonio office also lacked a warning coordinator meteorologist. That's the person who coordinates communications between local forecasting offices and emergency management services in communities. Think you might have needed that position? However, yeah, as a third however, this is a different kind of however, though. They say both offices had temporarily upped their staffing in anticipation of a dangerous weather event, which is typical in these circumstances. Yes, it's typical for them to do that in addition to what's normally there. In this particular case, they upped their staff to try and get back to where they were before, and they upped their staff with people who weren't used to being in that position. So they weren't familiar with the communities or the people to talk to or any of this. No. And in a situation like that, you get miscommunication, you get delayed notifications, you get a disaster. And that is what we had in Texas. And we cannot let that go. We cannot let the people responsible for this drive the narrative and say, oh, no, it's people weren't listening to the radio. How dare they? They were in tents in the middle of the night. It's their own fault. Don't let that happen. Don't let that happen. A whole bunch of kids died because of this, and they didn't have to. They did not have to. And we're seeing it again. We just saw it with the warning of the Supreme Court ruling today that it's going to have drastic, dramatic effects on crucial things. Do we really want to wait until the entire hurricane season has played out with more disasters, with more inadequate responses? Do we want to wait for the next outbreak of whatever disease is on the horizon?
The answer is yes.
We want to wait?
Yeah, your rhetorical questions, all the answers err on the side of cruelty. They don't care.
Well, they don't care.
No, they don't.
I'm not talking to them.
Okay.
I'm talking to the people that can still do something about it.
And who is that?
That's people like us.
How?
Well, okay, first of all, don't put this all on me. All right,
no, well, you're rhetorically putting it on us, the listeners.
I'm sweating enough as it is.
Okay. Let me put it this way. To quote someone I heard calling into C-SPAN today, thoughts and prayers aren't working.
No.
They're not. They don't. We do it after every shooting, after every disaster. It's great. It's reverent, but it's not working. It takes concrete action. It takes cooperation. You have to listen to people you don't ordinarily agree with. You have to actually coordinate. But in this case, who listens to Democrats anyway? Who listens to people that oppose you anyway? In this regime's view, if this stuff happens, doesn't matter. And all the better if it happens to people that aren't like them, people that are poorer than them, people that are undocumented or that might lean left and not be of their political persuasion,
in this case,
or in a country, a part of the country they don't care
in
about.
In this case, it was most likely their own supporters. They don't care about them either.
Well, right.
That's the point.
They got what they want. They have all this power, right? And they're now like wielding it. So why would they need more voters if they're gonna get rid of elections entirely?
The theme, I think, to this the stupid bill that got passed is that we don't care about you, and we're going to get what we want. We're going to cut social services, somehow make the deficit go up even more, a lot more, while cutting services, which is quite a card trick. And you know what? In about 4 or 5 years, that's when all hell's going to break loose. And then we can blame the people who took over after we collapsed, after we were voted out of office. Then we'll blame them because that's when it's going to happen. Nick LaLota, our local representative, is a perfect example of that. This guy is such a work of art. And when I say art, I don't mean the good kind. He is basically touting the fact that the bill passed and that the salt cap was quadrupled to 40,000 from 10,000. Now, keep in mind, the salt cap, basically, it's property taxes for families that are basically paying a certain amount. It's undeplicated. It would take a while to explain it. But basically, under Trump, the first term, it was reduced to $10,000, which was not enough for many families, especially on Long Island. He has been going around saying that he's going to restore that and make it a higher number. $40,000 is the number that has been touted recently. And now he's saying, yeah, I won. I got that. Except what he's not telling you is that he got that for only a few years, and then it goes away. It's temporary. This allows him to say, I fixed the situation. And by the time my political career is over, which, you know, TikTok, it's coming, it's not going to be my responsibility anymore. So maybe I'll get reelected one more time based on this. And you're still screwed down the road. This guy, you know, I almost believed him. I almost believed that he was going to actually make a stand against Trump and say, I'm not voting for your bill until you make this permanent. But no, he folded so easily. Just like all of them folded so easily. And they got nothing. Yeah, they a couple of years, great. That's you'll feel like maybe something nice happened, but then you'll blame somebody else. He's going to make sure that it's somebody else's fault and not his. I'm telling you now, look at his record. Look at what the bill has. Look at what he has been saying. And you'll see lying through his teeth. Just like so many of them have done and gotten really, really good at. So, yeah, kick it down the road.
So when people wish certain death upon you through their actions, is it not fair to wish the same to them?
Well, that's
turnabout.
You take care of that in a different radio show. That's not what we do here. We point out the injustices and hopefully get people motivated to do something. We don't advocate violence. But violence can be inevitable, and I recognize that when you push people, you know, when you have a situation where there's no other way out. And boy, we've been trying to avoid something like that over the years, even decades. Now, people in New York City, they are reacting in a rather interesting way. I think the last time we were on was the night of the primary in New York City, and Zohran Mamdani won. He kicked Cuomo's ass, and that was amazing. That was amazing to see that, to see a Democratic socialist actually win handily. And, you know, for a while, it seemed like Cuomo was going to do the right thing and actually bow out of the race. He's not, though. He's going to run as independent, as Eric Adams will do as well, the current mayor, the current corrupt mayor who was basically sold himself out to Trump. So basically a vote for him is a vote for Trump because he is going to do whatever Trump tells him because Trump has a whole lot on him. All those charges just went away. All the charges against Adams disappeared. And yeah, I'd be surprised if he isn't a Republican by November. Anyway, so this guy, Zohran Mamdani, you know, I honestly, I was surprised by this too. I thought he would have a tough time. Remember, New York Democrats are the ones who picked an ex-cop to be their mayor. The Democrats did that. So I didn't expect him to pick a Democratic socialist. But when you push people into a corner, when you basically say that things are just going to get worse and worse, well, people react. Eventually they react in whatever way they can. In this particular case, they voted for somebody they probably wouldn't have voted for 4 years ago. So today, Trump said, this was at one of his cabinet meetings, you know, where everybody kisses his ass around the table. He said he was not getting involved in the mayoral race, but he continued his ongoing attacks against Mamdani, who Trump continues to label a communist. Okay, you know, people who do this, they don't understand. They don't understand the differences between various categories. A democratic socialist is not a communist, and a communist is not a bad person. You know, but basically, people on the right, they call Joe Biden a communist. So how do you talk to these people? How can you possibly reason with them? They think anything that's not Trump is communism. It's really hard to explain. But I think the best answer is listen to what they have to say. Listen to what they're bringing up. Treat them with respect. And you might learn something. Anyway, so this is what Trump said. If a communist gets elected to run New York, it can never be the same. But we have tremendous power at the White House to run places when we have to. Basically threatening to take over New York City if New York City dares to elect Zohran Mamdani, a democratic socialist. They are terrified by this. They are absolutely terrified. And why exactly? He's pledged to make buses free. Well, he doesn't really have the power to do that, so I don't think that's even going to happen. But he might be able to make it easier to ride buses, you know, easier for people with low income. That's not a bad thing. Free childcare, are we afraid of that? Several municipal-run grocery stores. Okay, I've heard a lot of talk about this, about basically having Soviet-style grocery stores take over everything. And you see what I just said here. Several municipal-run grocery stores. A choice. Something different. Kind of like ranked choice voting, where you try a different system and see if it works better. Are we afraid of that? Of course we're afraid of that. But this is hardly the Stalinist takeover that is being portrayed as. Also, a rent freeze on regulated apartments. Well, that's been the case in New York City forever. Well, until recently. So, yeah. They are losing their crap over this. And I love it. But the other thing, Democrats aren't much better. You remember this this governor we used to have, David Patterson? Yeah, the progressives loved this guy. I didn't. I thought he was a phony, and he proved it this week. Former Governor David Patterson yesterday called for candidates still in the New York City mayor's race to find a way to unite behind one of them in order to defeat Zohran Mamdani. You're going to have a city run by an individual who supported the Intifadas. Oh my God, wow, supporting a resistance movement. When did that become a bad word? Well, it's a bad word, I guess, if you're on the other side of it. But don't forget, Intifada was a reaction. You know, it wasn't the offensive. And it's basically as simple as you can get. You're literally throwing stones at well-protected soldiers, you know, and you can't really illustrate resistance better than that. Individuals throwing stones at a military that is simply staggering. So yeah, that's his line there, that he supported the Intifadas. First of all, I he probably didn't even say that. He probably supported the Palestinians, and I know you're not supposed to do that either, but he did. And wow. So Patterson basically is the latest Democrat to oppose Mamdani. And of course, all the Democrats on Long Island are going to panic, because here's the thing. They are so weak that they're going to let themselves be portrayed as carbon copies of Mamdani because they're Democrats. Even if they're closer to center than anything else, that little D in parentheses is going to make them a communist too. He's not a communist, and they're not like him, but somehow they're going to yield to all of that and condemn him instead of condemning the people that they are trying to fight. Democrats, you got to get your act together. This is pathetic. It really is. Now, Patterson endorsed Cuomo in June, but declined to say whom he thought voters should support in the general election. And since Mondami's win, a chorus of centrist Democrats have criticized the 33-year-old's politics. Patterson joins a chorus of centrist Democrats who have rejected Mamdani. Political experts have mixed opinions on the meaning of his mayoral primary win. I think the meaning is he's going to be mayor. I think that's the meaning. How the topping of establishment politics will affect all Democratic candidates in the region. Guys, you preach diversity. This is diversity. You have somebody who's different from you. You have somebody who has different political views, but yet in the same party. Can you work together? Or are you just going to basically adopt the same talking points that Republicans have? I don't know. It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad to see that.
Yeah, I'm kind of done with politics. I don't know. See, I mean, this is great. I think there's a lot of promise, and I hope people coalesce and get line up, find coalitions, find ways to do the right thing. But the message is strong. The message is very clear that we don't matter. We aren't a part of the future that this regime desires. And I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry. But if you get in my way, it will be unfortunate for you. I'm not going to be weak. I'm not going to be a part of the so-called people that need to get it together. I have it together. And I think that there needs to be a little bit more ownership of our identity as citizens, and fierce ferocity, right? And I'm not with talk anymore. I'm tired of talking about all of this stuff, and trying to like cheerlead people to give a damn. If this is the future people want, and we're going to treat human life this way, then we are in a future that I'm wholly prepared for. Never wanted to embody it. Never wanted to have to live in the way I think that we're going to. But unfortunately, I'll do it. I will protect myself. I will protect people around me.
All right, before we all join the militia here, we're talking about the mayor race in New York City, for one thing.
And yeah, and you're talking about how it's going to fail and how it's not worth it and how the Democrats are trash or whatever. They don't get behind their own. Yeah, okay, it's all not worth it. We should all just give up, right? No.
If you interpret what I say as that, you're not listening. All right, that's all I have to say. I'm saying Democrats have to get their act together and unite. And if they don't do that, yeah, they're going to be run over by the opposition. And that would be a damn shame, because they have an opportunity now to actually show resistance, to actually do something. And every time this happens, they back down. And this can't continue. We're saying the same thing. We're saying it in different ways. But, you know, we have to have a strong showing against this craziness that's out there. Otherwise, we won't have the opportunity to do that anymore. And
I feel like the opportunity is gone for me, because I spent 20, 30 years fighting and advocating for all that diversity and all of that, magnanimousness and welcoming and like you say, diversity, and trying to find cooperation, trying to pull the levers that we have as citizens in government and get representation that truly represents people. But this whole place is rigged. It's the one thing that the right has said.
How would you feel if Mondami won? Would you feel that's a step?
Oh, I preface this. I do think that's great. I hope he does. So absolutely.
There are signs of hope. I'm just trying to hold on to
I'm tired
whatever.
Of being hopeful, though.
Well, we don't really have a choice at this point. It's right. Either that or we give up.
I'll be fortunate to be in a rocking chair still hoping, but I know the goalpost's going to move. Mm-hmm. It's going to err on the side of corruption and, dare I say, death. I'm sorry. It's morbid, but I fully believe...
If you think you're shocking anybody, you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm very skeptical.
But Kyle,
let
me just point out something to you. The, you know, angry as you are, Republicans are always angrier.
Angry?
Why are they so angry all the time? Why? They win. They get everything they want, yet they're still angry constantly.
What, should I be laughing? I can be apathetic. Well, do you want me to just sit back and be smug?
I don't want you to be like them. I really don't want you to be like them. And
Right. So I'm like them.
I'm saying if you're perpetually angry, yes, you will be like them. That is what happens. That is what they want. So be careful of that.
So how should I be with this?
Listen, we don't have time. We only have 5 minutes
Please,
left.
Let me know. I would love to know.
That's a tall order. But I just got
totally
this.
Chill.
Hold on. Mayor Adams is now been sued by four former police officers, saying that a culture of cronyism has ruled the department under his watch. Okay, that's
all right.
That's something right
well,
there.
I'm just...
And here's some other good news.
I'm done getting my hopes up.
Okay, well, this might give you some hope. Benjamin Netanyahu has nominated Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize. Come on, a little comedy here. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, the people at the Nobel Committee receiving that nomination from a war criminal.
Yeah, that man is trash too.
Oh my God. It's like Mussolini nominating Hitler for a peace prize. This is... Words fail me.
Just repairing the damage from these people will take a lifetime, so well beyond mine.
Trump's nominated. He's been nominated before, and he's been nominated by a group of U.S. House Republicans and somehow two Norwegian lawmakers. They separately nominated him in 2018 for his work to ease nuclear tensions with North Korea until they realized that's not what he was doing at all. Not all the nominations have been valid. The Norwegian Nobel Committee, which selects the prize winners, said in 2018 that someone using a stolen identity had nominated Trump at least twice. Wow. Okay. Well, that tells you something right there. Okay. Well, that's, you know, I'll tell you, if they actually take this seriously, add the Nobel Committee to another group that I have no respect for, but I don't think they will. I really don't think they will. And then finally tonight, as we are quickly running out of time, I don't know if you heard about this, Kyle. The Bob Villain IDF chants in England. It's spelled like Bob Dylan except with a V, and it's clever because Bob Villain is the name of the band, but the singer is Bobby Villain. Okay, all that aside. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has condemned UK punk duo Bob Villain for urging death to Israeli troops in what he called appalling hate speech at the Glastonbury Festival. Now, the organizers have also said they were appalled after frontman rapper Bobby Villain led chants of free Palestine and death to the IDF, which is the Israeli Defense Forces. A BBC spokesperson, which was broadcasting the event, previously said some of the comments were deeply offensive, adding it had issued a warning on screen about very strong and discriminatory language. Sir Keir has also criticized NECAP, I'm not sure who NECAP is, saying ahead of the festival that their appearance was not appropriate. The Irish language rap group had previously described Israel's military action in Gaza as a genocide, which it is. He said there is no excuse for this kind of appalling hate speech. I said that NECAP should not be given a platform, and that goes for any other performers making threats or inciting violence.
Again, federal agents that kill people, how saying you wish the worst to them, is that wrong? What is the double standard?
I have 2 minutes to make my point, Kyle.
Fine, make it.
All right, so basically, we'll get back to the anti-Semitism accusations here, because that's in there as well. We only have 2 minutes to do it. Is it okay to say death to the Russian army for what they've done in Ukraine? Is that okay? Is it okay to say death to Al-Qaeda for what they've done to us? Is it okay to say death to somebody who is indisputably evil? I don't usually go around making death chants. This isn't my thing. But I can understand why people who have been victims of a particular force, and in this particular case, the IDF, killing tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians, I could see how they could be seen as evil incarnate. And while I don't see an indication of overt anti-Semitism here, but, you know, maybe there was. They've erased everything. It's almost impossible to see what it was that was actually being chanted. But in this particular case, I want to see the evidence like I always am asking for, see the evidence of actual anti-Semitism. Or was this simply a chant against a military force that is killing a lot of innocent people in a genocide? And the BBC and the British Prime Minister and virtually everybody is in a panic about this, saying we have to condemn this. We have to keep this from ever being seen by anybody. Well, let's discuss what it is we're talking about in the first place. If somebody is saying death to the IDF, it's not something I would chant because I don't think a rock concert or rap concert or whatever is a place for death chants, but I certainly understand why somebody would feel that way. It's a horrible thing what they're doing, and we are complicit because we're not doing anything about it.
If you don't let people express themselves too, artistically or in other venues like that with speech and expression, you basically suppress it and it manifests and emerges in other ways that can be violent. So I think art should be a realm where things that are maybe not safe for the nightly news on BBC should be allowed. And I just, it is...
Mm-hmm. Got it.
It's a horrible, horrible world we live in.
OTW at 2600.com. That'll have to be the last word, unfortunately. We'll see you next week.
Here comes the helicopter. Second time today. Everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say. Don't believe in guarded borders.
some son of a